Hello and welcome to another Future of Real Estate podcast. I'm Damien Wild, editor of EG. In this episode, we're looking at trust in real estate and in UK PLC. Later, we'll also look at developments in the Middle East after Savills' acquisition of the Cluttons business in the region completed this month. In what is an action-packed episode, we'll hear from Savills' head of EMEA, James Sparrow, and head of the Middle East, Steve Morgan. I'll also be talking to David Mann, TFT partner and co-founder of LGBT Network Freehold, and JLL director Chris Walters about public confidence in the sector. And on the wider subject of trust in business, we'll hear from Tony Blair. Yes, that Tony Blair. So who do you trust? It seems to be the dominant question this week. On Wednesday morning at separate events in London, it was front and centre. At Grosvenor's HQ in Mayfair, the British Property Federation was discussing the findings of its latest annual property industry sentiment survey. Brexit mood aside, there was a revealing section on trust. The survey asked property investors and advisors what they feel will be the industry's greatest challenges and opportunities ahead, and examines the degree of confidence in economics and politics among industry leaders. This year, for the first time, it went wider and looked at trust in real estate. Now, the majority of respondents did not believe trust, public trust in the UK's planning system or the real estate industry is strong. 85% believe that of planning, 75% of the real estate industry. And if that's investors and advisors, imagine how much larger those numbers would be if you were to ask the wider public. At the same time, just a few streets away at the Royal Institution, Tony Blair was speaking at the launch of the annual Edelman Trust Barometer. The PR advisor polls the views of thousands of people around the world, and while these things are always imperfect, it's as representative as these sorts of surveys come. And it paints a pretty miserable picture, revealing how Brexit has broken our faith in government, politics, and politicians. That's their words, not mine. So no surprises there, you might say. But what was interesting, and where it dovetails nicely with the BPF research, is in this respect. Because what the Edelman Barometer shows is that where trust lingers, it is with employers, and more specifically, with your own employer. The public continue to look to business to fill the shortcomings of government, with more than 3 in 4 Brits believing that CEOs should take the lead on change, rather than waiting for the government to impose it. That's up 19 percentage points since last year. Equal pay, prejudice and discrimination, and training for the top jobs of tomorrow were listed as the top areas where CEOs can create positive change. Now, the public believes that employees, not the customers, come first. So 3 in 4 say that they trust their employee to do what is right, considerably higher than any other institutional relationship in the UK today.
Employer being the most trusted, I can understand.
Now that was Tony Blair talking at the launch of the Trust Barometer, and he also explained why he thought businesses avoided politics.
Businesses always like to speak out because, you know, they think, God, you know, most businesses, let's be clear, you know, if they can keep away from politics, they're very happy. You know, so, and I completely get it and understand it, but unfortunately, when it really does concern their interests, they should speak and you know, provided they do so in a respectful and sensible way and based on evidence.
So in real estate generally, and in development more specifically, business cannot avoid politics. The planning process simply demands it. It also requires the industry to be able to explain and to articulate the wider benefits of development to the wider public. And on this, I caught up with David Mann and Chris Walters of TFT and JLL, respectively, who are both on the development front line. I began by asking David whether persuading the public to trust the real estate sector is a winnable battle.
I hope so, otherwise we're screwed. I think some individual developments are perceived by the public as good, some of the big regeneration schemes like King's Cross, for example. But I think when the general public think about the property industry, they see us as, you know, champagne swilling, cigar smoking predators. But if you think about all the good that our industry does, and the growth of corporate social responsibility, we just don't quite seem to shout about it enough, or the public doesn't get it, and that's going to have a significant impact on getting planning for developments. And PR consultants seem to be doing particularly well out of trying to sway public opinion on most big schemes now, but equally for, you know, getting the next gen wanting to come into our industry. Mm. And I don't understand why, because we do, you know, creating something tangible which will outlive you you know, we should. I don't understand why kids won't do that. You know,
so unless we do get it right, it will thwart development and you know, cut off talent supply.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Chris, that's your meat and drink, isn't it? These sorts of conversations. How do we get it right?
I think the most important thing is to plan early and make sure that you've got a game plan that is engaging with the right people. So the main thing is, when you're doing long-term development and regenerating an area, is to work with the local community and make sure that you're doing that in a way which is not meaning that your client, or my client in this case, working for a developer, is viewed as the big bad developer swooping in and taking over and not giving a hoot about anyone who lives there and is purely focused around profit. I think examples like King's Cross, where they have truly regenerated an Argent, have done a great job, and that's a flagship scheme for London, UK, if not globally, it's definitely globally. And there are a number of developers in the market today who are doing genuine placemaking. I think the challenge is that it needs to be a step away from just sort of a nod towards actually delivering genuine places, and away from just being corporate social responsibility. It needs to be genuine. And there are only a handful, I think, of true developers who do that exceptionally well. But the ones that do it are getting in there early, they're engaging with communities, they're doing meanwhile use in terms of trying to engage, and they're also engaging with planners in the right way and saying, this is how we are going to take this place and make it a new thriving part of your city or town.
So much of that is in the control of those public sector bodies who are awarding the contracts, often putting in the land, you know, and there is an onus on them to select partners who do take it seriously. Presumably they are, and they will increasingly in the market sort this out.
Yeah, so and that's interesting, because we run, as part of the role that I do in JLL, we run public procurement exercises on behalf of public sector clients. And increasingly, when you have the ability to test the market on particular questions in terms of what sits under that technical umbrella, and the whole idea of creating social value rather than just economic value is really going high up there. They want to know that you can go through the planning process, you know, deliver high quality design, that you've got a strong team to deliver it, but they actually also want you to be able to demonstrate how you're going to phase the development, how are you going to take up those parcels of land through those phases and actually create the sum of the parts, rather than just doing it in bite-sized chunks to get the highest bit of money out of it, really.
Okay, and David, do you think that how quickly can this be turned around? It's not going to happen in 2019, presumably 2020. You know, how long do we have to wait until the industry is taken more seriously and perhaps take some of the things that you and Chris have been talking about more seriously?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, public perception can be persuaded very quickly, really. And I don't know whether we need a fly on the wall documentary or something like that, which kind of shows the property industry for what it is. In a positive way. I think our professional institutions, it's a problem that they have constantly. How are we going to engage with schools, for example, and get kids to get it? They'll play Sim City on their iPhones, but they don't realise that they can become a planner and do it for real.
So that's quite an interesting thing that you just said, because there is something that I've done before with the Urban Lands and Land Institute, and I'm struggling to remember the name of it now that they've got, but they have a fantastic program where you go into schools, and I think they're predominantly all in their secondary school children, and I went in there and I was with three other people in the industry, and they hypothetically build a development, and it's high level stuff. It's not a detailed financial Excel or in terms of anything like that, but it's the principles of what types of use you can be delivering on a hypothetical scheme in your town centre, and where you should be putting sort of your high-end residential next to your low-end residential, where do you put the community off it, and actually engaging with people at that younger part of their potential careers is where you start getting people excited about real estate. So I think it's winning the hearts and minds at the start, so that hopefully that will be a generational thing, which I think is what we're saying is one part of the story. And then maybe the other bit is how we're being presented outside of the real estate space. So how do we change that general perception that David's talking about, which I do think is right. You know, generally the property market doesn't have a great outlook, I don't think, in terms of how it's perceived, and it's up to us to change that.
So a fly on the wall TV show all about commercial property coming to your screens, hopefully sometime soon. Our Davos special last week was hugely popular. Thanks all for listening. So we're keeping up the international focus this week with a look at the Middle East. Last year, Savills announced it would be acquiring Clutton's Middle East business. This month, that deal completed. I'm joined in the studio by Steve Morgan, CEO of Savills Middle East, and James Sparrow, head of EMEA for Savills. Steve, how has the business changed?
We're absolutely delighted to be part of the Savills Group. We're now part of a truly global player, 600 offices, 38,000 people. As you know, the Clutton's business in the Middle East was very strong and also a market leading business, been there for 40 years plus, and now to be part of Savills, we can offer our clients something perhaps we couldn't previously with a truly global footprint.
And what is it that you could offer clients that you couldn't previously? What are clients able to capitalise upon?
So I think if you look at the Middle East and you look at real estate markets globally, increasingly it's a bit of a cliche, but markets are becoming more global, real estate is becoming more of a global offer. And more often than not, our clients have more real estate interest than just in the Middle East. So now we can truly offer additional services, additional service lines, and a truly global platform, whether that be looking to invest into Asia or looking back the other way through Europe.
And has the offer changed? Will it change?
I think in terms of the geographical platform, we've got one of the largest and most advanced geographical platforms in the region, with 220 people through 7 offices. So in terms of the geographical locations, unlikely to change significantly. What will change, though, I think, is the different service lines that we can now offer and tap into the fantastic expertise and best-in-class global expertise that the Savills business has.
And James, it's been 6 months of integration. The two businesses are where you'd like them to be now?
We are absolutely delighted with it. Yeah, it's gone extremely well. This is a business, as you know, up until 6 months ago, our business in the Middle East was through association. So it's something, a gap that we absolutely wanted to plug for a whole host of obvious reasons, the Middle East being a key region in around the globe for us.
And why was it a gap? I would have expected you to have had an offer there previously.
Well, we were operating there, but it was through association, and it's something that we've always wanted to do, but it was a question of getting the right business, and reason why we're so delighted. This is, I have to say, a business that we've had our eye on for many, many years. We think it's a fantastic business. It's been there for the longest established in the Middle East, and the opportunity came along. So we are pleased, and it's gone extremely well, and I think primarily because I think that there's a fantastic people fit. And that's working really well, and our teams are working very well in the Middle East and also the link up across the globe. So, and I think the timing in terms of this month, in terms of the rebranding to Savills, which has happened in the last few weeks, is something that's, again, it's gone, the timing is right.
And Steve, that can be a tricky thing when clients are used to dealing with a particular brand. Clutton's, as you say, was well established, well known there. Was there any pushback on that change of brand?
I think, you know, what's been quite good with the transition is we've had 6 months to educate our clients and to talk them through what's happening. So the acquisition was completed in June. We've been part of the Savills Group since June. The key thing is the message has been very strong that this is still the old team. It's still the board that were running the previous business. I'm still there. And the service that you're getting is still going to be exactly the same, and the relationships will be the same. But now we have the opportunity to offer you something extra with a global brand.
Okay, and these are tricky times politically, economically around the world. What's the situation in the Middle East right now? Is it a region that's looking for inward investment, looking to make outbound investments, and looking at the UK particularly?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's fairly complex in the Middle East at the moment in the different locations. You know, it always has been very different. Whether you're in
I shouldn't boil 7 markets down to one. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, doing business in Abu Dhabi is very different to doing business in Sharjah, which is different to doing business in Bahrain, but I think generally speaking, you know, there are some challenges in the markets. There are some headwinds across the Middle East. Generally, in most of the markets that we operate, it's a similar story of oversupply across many sectors and an issue around affordability. As you know, generally in markets where you see oversupply, prices will start to slide until such time that investors jump back in. But at the same time, what we've had is as the currencies are pegged to the dollar has been strengthening, which has been taking away any price decline essentially for global investors. So that there are some challenges, but that said, there are still some very positive things going on as well.
I was out at Cityscape in the autumn in Dubai, and the conversations there were very much as you describe. But I wonder which of those seven markets that you're in are performing well, or ones that listeners should feel optimistic about, and which are the ones that they should be a little bit more cautious about?
Yeah, I think there are opportunities across all of the markets. I think, Dubai in particular is very well established. So our business in Dubai, we're expecting to see some small growth over the next 18 months or so, but what we are looking to do is gain market share and to offer service lines to our clients that we don't currently do. In Sharjah, we've got some very strong new instructions going on. That's a good market. And two key markets for us that we're also very excited about are Saudi and Cairo. These are big countries with big populations and big economies. And whilst they have their challenges, there's still some very strong opportunities there.
And Saudi is a challenging market for very many reasons that are well covered in the media currently. But from a real estate investment point of view, there had been an expectation that that there would be significant outbound investment, particularly into the UK, perhaps, and particularly into the UK. Do you think that's likely to come, or will these challenges stand in the way of that?
Yeah, no, I still so Saudi. I'm no political expert, but Saudi, again, is multifaceted, but it's also a very exciting market. It's a big economy, big population. It's a young population with a large proportion of the population being under 30. So on the ground in Saudi, there's huge opportunity across all real estate areas. And actually what's happening in Saudi is it means that real estate is opening up in some sectors. So, for example, cinemas at the moment is a big piece in Saudi, because you haven't been able to have a cinema in Saudi for the last 40 years, and now you can. So there are huge opportunities, and we see the opportunities working with the government and the ministries. So there are new cities being launched in Saudi, so it's big stuff, it's big numbers, and it's big projects. I think investment the other way around, I think it's a wait and see game into the UK. I think there's a huge opportunity with the exchange rate. The pound's probably 20 to 25% stronger against the dollar than it was 3 or 4 years ago, and if you add into that perhaps some decline in asking prices across some sectors in the UK, there's a real opportunity for Middle East buyers to pile back in. And I think at the moment what we're seeing is a wait and see. So I think once we get through the springtime and into the summer, I would expect to see Middle East money looking very carefully at the UK markets.
And we're only a handful of episodes into this podcast, and each week I try and keep it Brexit light, but always fail to keep it off the agenda entirely. Is it a big talking point out in the Middle East, or is it, as I heard one Chinese investor describe it at MIPIM a couple of years ago, a first world problem?
Yeah, I think I think people watch with interest, but at the same time, it is what it is. It's happening, and there are plenty of other global markets to focus on at the moment. So, and I think people are probably a bit weary with it, as I think people are in the UK. So I think with that comes opportunities, and I think once we get through the spring and into the summer, as I said, I think they'll be looking at the market pretty carefully.
Okay, thank you. And James, looking at the Savills business globally, this brings more balance to the business, doesn't it? More exposure to opportunity, perhaps, and less or more exposure to risk.
Certainly much more opportunity. And as I said, we've sort of plugged that gap in the middle. We've got very strong businesses, as you know, in Asia, very strong businesses in Europe. And the bit, the sort of transit point between the two, is the bit that we were missing, missing piece of the jigsaw. So, we see tremendous opportunities. And actually, in terms of capital outflow from the Middle East, the reality is that there's always been strong inflow of capital from the Middle East into the UK in particular, and to a certain extent across Europe. And that always has ebbed and flowed. But in the last few years, that those investments continue. And there's lots of evidence that they're still investing in the UK for the reasons that Steve has mentioned. Because whilst Brexit is causing various sort of uncertainty, the fact is the fundamentals of the property market in the UK remain strong. The exchange rate is weak. So what we are finding in reality is that not just from the Middle East, but from Asia as well, there is continued investment going into the UK and, in fact, across our wider European business. So we think we're well placed now to benefit from having a strong business there. And similarly, the sort of flow of capital going into Asia as well. So the links are very, very strong.
And do you see opportunity for UK businesses in the Middle East region?
I think because there is so much growth that's planned in the Middle East, and as Steve says, you can't sort of take one, make a statement across the whole piece, because actually it varies on a country by country basis. But fundamentally, there's a huge amount of growth and expansion and investment going in across the Middle East, and with that I think will come clear opportunities. From our perspective, I think one of the reasons why we were so keen and excited about this business coming into the Savills Group is because it's a business, it's been well established and it understands how to do business in the Middle East, and that's absolutely fundamental for us. Simply flying in there and trying to do business is difficult, it is different, and having been there for 40 years, this business absolutely, and the people in it, understand how that works, and we see tremendous opportunity for us, but also for other businesses there. But understanding how it operates is key.
And is it a platform for further growth for Savills through acquisition of other businesses, other teams?
Certainly that's the plan. Our strategy is certainly we want to grow the business. We anticipate that primarily being through organic growth, but we will do strategic acquisitions where it's the right thing to do. But for us, you know, it's such a strong business with such great people, and we want to make sure that we continue to build on that strong platform. And so big acquisitions are unlikely, but organic growth and small acquisitions is something that we'll be looking to do.
And beyond the Middle East, are other parts of the world in your sights?
Well, we continue to, as you know, we've expanded our European business very substantially. It's three times the size that it was 8 years ago, our wider European business. And so we've invested heavily in that. As you'll recall, in the recent years, we acquired a Graham Newman in Spain, for example. So we've had big expansion, and our strategy now is to focus very much on integration. But we will continue to do acquisitions, and indeed we're looking at a number of acquisitions now where it's the right thing to do. So in the European business. In terms of the UK, as you know, we have a very well-established business here. It's a big business. So again, our growth in the last 5 or 6 years, 80% of the growth of our UK business, and it's grown very substantially, has been organic, and about 20% of that growth has been through acquisition, and we'd anticipate continuing along the same path.
So from the Middle East to establishing and retaining trust. As Steve said, real estate is becoming more of a global offer and is getting further linked to politics. The two together perhaps present a future opportunity. Think global, act local, and do so with the trust of all stakeholders, and success should follow. What could be simpler?